Blog Talk Radio.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard. Keep your arms and legs on the inside at all times. Hold on tight. The show is about to begin.
Hello?
Yes.
Who's there?
Rob.
Oh, hey, Robert, Cindy. Ashley's having all kinds of trouble, so I guess we're going to get started. I have no idea. I was in the middle of an appointment and had to get out. So all I know is we're on. So let's just get started and do the best we can, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Got it? Well, it'll be recorded. So anyway, let me start and tell everybody what you are so that I'm assuming people are listening because there were a bunch of people that signed up. So sorry, everybody, we had some technical difficulties. I'm Cindy Bishop, and I'm going to be talking to my favorite attorney in the world, Robert Pope. So, Robert, I have to give you a few kudos. So here we go. He's a real estate attorney licensed in both Virginia and Maryland. He currently runs his own law firm where he primarily represents real estate brokerages and title companies in Northern Virginia. He regularly teaches at seminars on many real estate-related topics, including foreclosures, and he is one of my best instructors, in fact, my only attorney that I utilize now in Northern Virginia for all of my education and even some of my personal needs, right?
Yep.
That's right. So let's start. One of the topics that you do that I really find interesting because of your ethics and because of your high level of integrity is the foreclosure work that you've done in the past and you do and know about now. So let me ask you some questions, and maybe you can answer them and share it with the audience. So when a homeowner is struggling with their mortgage payments, what usually happens before a foreclosure sale is scheduled? Not to mention, of course, they're scared to death. So what does usually happen?
Okay. Well, first thing that usually happens is the homeowner is going to get progressively more serious letters. Usually the first letter will start out something along the lines of, hey, we noticed you missed your payment, not figuring that it's because of any difficulty or anything, just an oversight on the part of the homeowner. And they'll usually in the letter provide some options. Hey, you can give us a call. You can send us a money order. You can go online. You know, here are all the options to go ahead and pay your mortgage. After the first month, they start kind of getting a little more persistent, because after the first month, they kind of realize, okay, well, this isn't just an oversight, because very few people are in a position where they can just sort of accidentally forget to pay their mortgage payment 2 months in a row without noticing.
Mm-hmm.
So your next couple of letters usually will have something along the lines of, you know, okay, they'll mention foreclosure alternatives. They'll talk about, you know, we want to help you keep your home, and before it gets any further, please contact us. Make sure that, you know, we can work together to get this solved. And oftentimes they'll have one of the applications for homeowner assistance. It's a standardized form that I don't recall if HUD developed it or some combination of Fannie and Freddie or all three of them came up with this form for homeowner assistance where it'll cover different programs like HARP, HAMP, short sales, or deeds in lieu of foreclosure, so that the homeowner, who is at this point at least 2 months behind, if not more, can have some options in terms of how to get back on track with their mortgage.
Oh, well, that's good to know. So these alternatives you mentioned, what exactly are they?
Okay, well, there's several of them that they have now. A couple of them with acronyms that people have probably heard in the news. First of all, HARP. It's a program where homeowners that have very little or no equity can refinance the mortgage with some kind of government assistance. A lot of people are what's called underwater, where they owe more than the property is worth. In a normal circumstance, you wouldn't be able to refinance in that situation because you're not going to be able to borrow enough money to pay off the existing mortgage. So this way, people can take advantage. Let's say they bought their house years and years ago when the rates were much higher, and now they want to be able to take advantage of today's 3% rates. Well, this HARP program can assist them to refinance with a lower rate, so they can perhaps be able to afford their mortgage payments again. Another program is HAMP. It's the loan modification program that got a lot of press a few years back where everyone was looking into getting their loans modified. Pretty much what happens with HAMP is the lender will modify the terms of the loan for them. Either they'll reduce the interest or they'll tack payments that are unpaid to the back of the loan so that the homeowner is back on track, or some combination of the two. Another possibility for foreclosure alternative is a short sale. A short sale is where a homeowner sells the property for less than they owe. So if the property that they own is worth $200,000 with today's market, but the owner owes $250,000, the lender may allow them to sell the property for what it's worth at $200,000, and the lender would waive the right to the rest of the money owed. So all of these different options, of course, are based on the idea that the homeowner is struggling for some kind of legitimate reason. They're not just sort of randomly saying, I don't feel like paying my mortgage anymore. One other possibility is the deed in lieu of foreclosure. It's fairly simple compared to the other programs, where a homeowner just signs a deed transferring the property back to the lender. So that way it short circuits the entire foreclosure process. It's kind of the equivalent of if you were borrowing money on a car, you just drive the car back to the dealer and leave the keys in the ignition and walk away. Same kind of principle.
Okay.
But the key with all of these is the homeowner has to go through this uniform application that's going to go through all of their financial information. And oftentimes the lenders are going to want backup documentation so that they can prove it's a legitimate hardship and it's not just the homeowner not feeling like paying their mortgage anymore.
Okay. So does the lender turn it over to someone at some point, such as a law firm, assuming, I guess, that the homeowner hasn't been in touch with them to do a deed in lieu or to do a short sale, but actually they're behind in their payments and, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things that I tell people before it even gets to this point is, you know, make sure that you're communicating with your lender. I mean, a lot of times homeowners that are struggling, they don't want to open their mail. They don't want to answer the phone. I mean, if my mortgage is with SunTrust and I look on my caller ID and I know I'm 3 months behind on my mortgage and the caller ID says SunTrust, I'm not going to answer the phone. So, but the best thing to do is, of course, to stay in contact with your lender. Now, if they don't stay in contact with the lender, or at some point, you know, they have been in contact, but they just haven't gotten anywhere, guess what will happen is the lender will turn it over to a foreclosure law firm. There's several of these in Northern Virginia. All of them, you know, kind of do the same work all the time. So I see kind of the same law firms each time that I talk to a homeowner about this. Anywhere from a few months to 6 or more months from the first missed payment, and the lender sends the account over to this foreclosure law firm. And that they take over the process at that point. What happens then is that's where they're getting all their communication from. It's all going to come from this law firm at this point, and very little, if anything, comes from the lender anymore. And the homeowner gets the law letters from the law firm, and they'll first send some kind of letter stating, you know, hey, this account has been referred to us for collections. And then they'll eventually get to the point where they actually set up an auction date if the homeowner isn't able to get current or take advantage of one of those foreclosure alternatives. But one thing that homeowners often have trouble with is the fact that once they get far enough into the process, the law firm is the one that they're most likely talking to all the time, but the law firm really isn't the entity that has any control over actually canceling the sale or postponing it. They're just doing what their client tells them. So if your loan is with Bank of America and it's been referred to one of these law firms, even though you're communicating with the law firm, at the end of the day, Bank of America is who decides whether or not that foreclosure sale goes through, and they're who decides whether or not you get to take advantage of any of these foreclosure alternatives that I talked about.
Okay, so the bank actually has to decide if you get to take advantage of a HAMP or HARP or something like that. It isn't just the rite of passage.
Right. I mean, they're going to look at things, and I'm sure that on in their internal workings, they've got specific criteria for this. For instance, you know, I mean, they're going to plug in the numbers that the homeowner provides them in terms of income and expenses, and they'll say, okay, you know, if we modify this loan, will it enable them to have no more than whatever a third of their monthly income going toward housing, things like that? They're going to make sure that that'll comply with it before they enable the homeowner, or before they give them that option. So,
Yeah,
at the end of the day, the lenders or the investors, as the case may be, are the ones that choose whether or not they're going to offer any of these alternatives, or not so much offer them, but accept them.
Okay. It was really based on criteria, not so much, I don't like the color of your hair, You have to admit, you have to basically fit into these categories.
Right, right.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay,
I'm
so
sure there's some wiggle room, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, I'll be honest, I've never been on the lender's side of this. I've just seen what happens from the homeowner's perspective, and I've seen a very wide range of results. Some people that think would never get a loan modification end up getting them. Others who I think, hey, all they'd have to do is knock $200 a month off of this loan payment and the homeowner would be just fine, and they end up getting referred to foreclosure. So I'm not quite sure how the magic formula works. I'm sure
I don't see a lot of consistency either. So yeah, it's hard to know, but at least at the starting point, it seems that there's some structure to who would fit into these programs, because it's designed for people that are truly in distress.
Versus
somebody that just doesn't feel like making their payment anymore and they can't sell their house. So,
exactly.
But they've got $1 million in the bank, you know. So,
yeah.
All right, so one thing that I've seen is lots of advertisements on TV. You know, of course, you hear them on the radio, and it's always, you know, you're often times struggling homeowners, you know, they get ads in the mail from foreclosure defense companies. You know, do these really help, and how do they work, and can these people really be taken advantage of?
Okay. Yeah. First off, to give an explanation of this, I worked for one of these companies for about 6 months back in 2010 before I left, when I saw that they couldn't actually help. And pretty much what they did is they just took advantage of struggling homeowners. So I know exactly how these companies work in Virginia. When I left there, I had started in July of 2010. I left in the end of the year because at the point where I realized that all they were doing was taking advantage of these homeowners, I realized I just couldn't ethically continue to tell these homeowners with a straight face that, hey, they might be able to keep their house if they pay this law firm a whole bunch of money. So usually what the key pitch that they make to homeowners is the foreclosure defense firm can stop foreclosures without filing for bankruptcy. This is the key words that if anybody ever hears that phrase, stop foreclosures without filing for bankruptcy, that's a red flag in terms of they're probably one of these companies that does what the firm I used to work for does. The main way that they try to delay or stop foreclosures, it pretty much focuses on filing a particular type of lawsuit against the current loan servicer or investor. So to give a bit of information on this, and while this might get kind of lawyery at times, it's important that listeners understand how this works, because when I was at this company, they kind of referred to what I'm going to explain as the secret sauce, or something where, you know, they didn't want anyone to know what the formula was, but I'm just explaining it to everyone because it doesn't work. All right. So many people are familiar with the concept of mortgage-backed securities, where multiple mortgage notes are bundled into an investment product, kind of like a mutual fund, except instead of filled with different stocks, it's filled with different notes. So when a homeowner in Virginia borrows money to buy a house, they're signing two key documents. Granted, there's a whole ton of other things they're signing, but for this purpose, there are two primary documents, the note and the deed of trust. The note is what obligates them to pay back the loan. It's what sets forth, you know, this is your interest rate, this is your total loan, this is your principal and interest payment over the entire 30 years. And then the deed of trust is the document that gets recorded in land records that secures the payment under the note. This is what they put in land records so that anybody can look up and see, hey, there's a lien on this property that is securing a mortgage payment. So what happens is, let's say a borrower originally borrows from Bank of America. When the note and the deed of trust get signed, both documents list Bank of America as the lender. It'll always be a defined term in the deed of trust. So it'll say, you know, lender, quote, in quotations, is Bank of America. So it's clear throughout all the documents, wherever the word lender is, that's Bank of America. Now, after the settlement, Bank of America, in all likelihood, is probably going to sell the note to an investor, and that investor may transfer it again and again until such point as eventually the note ends up getting owned by, and here's an example that I've seen probably a few dozen times over the years, it'll be something like Deutsche Bank National Association as trustee for Harborview Trust Series 2005-A4D, something like that, instead of Bank of America. So, and the way that they can transfer these things, in Virginia, a note can be transferred simply by transferring the physical ownership of it. If you physically have the original note in your hand, you can exercise its terms. So it's very easy in Virginia to transfer these from lender to lender to lender. Oftentimes what will happen is the original lender will just stamp on the last page, pay to the order of, and put a blank there, and then sign it underneath. Well, now whoever they transfer it to can just fill in that blank, and they're the note holder. So,
boy, that's scary.
Now what happens, though, is the deed of trust usually doesn't get transferred, because anytime you do something with land records in Virginia, and I'm sure in other states as well, there are significant fees involved. They always want to get a recordation tax or a grantor's tax or some kind of filing tax involved. And so since it's so easy to transfer the note by itself, usually they weren't transferring the deeds of trust. The only trick is the deed of trust is what contains the right to foreclose on the property. That's what says, hey, if you are in default under the note, we can foreclose, and it explains how they do it. So now, let's say the homeowner is now struggling and the Deutsche Bank investor group decides to foreclose. However, the deed of trust only lists the original lender, Bank of America, as being able to foreclose. So the lawsuit that these foreclosure defense firms try to use is to sue for what's called quiet title, because they're saying this new investor, new note holder, doesn't have the rights of the deed of trust. So what happens is, the trouble is that this doesn't work. The lenders or investors know all they've got to do in response to these lawsuits is file a motion to dismiss the case, and judges across Virginia will grant that motion and the case disappears. When I first started with this company, what used to happen is we could file one of these lawsuits and they would stop the foreclosure. But as the months went by, they finally figured out that they were inevitably going to get these things dismissed, and so they just stopped canceling foreclosures in reaction to these lawsuits. So they don't even slow down the process anymore. However, the foreclosure defense companies rarely, if ever, will slow down the foreclosure process. The foreclosure defense companies just pitch themselves very effectively. I mean, if you're sitting at a table and you have a lawyer telling you that, hey, the your lender, this is a predatory loan and you were taken advantage of, and, we're going to litigate on your behalf. And sometimes they'll even say something like, hey, you never know if they can't find the note, maybe you can get your house for free, that sort of thing. But what happens is, by the time the homeowner pays thousands of dollars to the defense firm, they realize the foreclosure defense company can't help. But of course, at that point, the foreclosure defense company will usually say something like, well, we never guaranteed you any particular result, or the judge just didn't go our way this time, while in the background, they know darn well exactly what a judge is going to say in terms of these lawsuits. So,
wow, that's really scary. I mean, it really is, because people are spending money and unsuspectingly getting taken advantage of, which you would think they would be able to get rid of their licenses if somebody knew enough to file a complaint, because it's really, really awful.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because the firm that I was with has, since that time, the owner of the firm has been publicly reprimanded by the Virginia State Bar and has been prohibited from ever practicing in this particular area of law again.
Wow.
This is specifically what had happened, was the way their fee program works is like this. You go in for your initial intake, and during that meeting, one of the things that the lawyer or paralegal that's meeting with you will say is, hey, what's your monthly mortgage payment? So let's say it's $3,000. So then when they prepare your fee agreement, then they're going to say, well, our monthly retainer is $1,500. Well, if you're sitting there struggling about paying a $3,000 mortgage payment and a lawyer tells you, hey, if you sign up with us, we can keep you in your house rent-free, or not rent-free, but without paying your mortgage and you won't have to file for bankruptcy, but it'll only cost you half as much money. Well, that sounds pretty good.
Pretty attractive.
The only problem is that months later, when you finally lost your house at foreclosure, you realize that they can't do anything for you, you've already spent all this money, and you have that much less money to try and get caught up on your mortgage.
Wow. So. Oh, my goodness gracious. That's just terrible. So just out of curiosity, because I know you do bankruptcy work with people, some people use that as a tactic to at least put the foreclosure off, which is good, hopefully with the idea of working something out. But what do you see with the effectiveness of that, using it as a tool?
Well, what I've told people is in the seminars that I do, with your company, Cindy, is that there is a very short book on how to stop foreclosures guaranteed in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and it only has two chapters, 7 and 13. And this is why the only way, if anyone ever tells you that they can stop a foreclosure guaranteed in Virginia without filing for bankruptcy, they are lying to you, is exactly what they are doing. Because if you file a 7 or a 13, no matter what time you do it in reference to the foreclosure auction, you can do it as recently as a couple hours before the auction. It's not like you have to do it days or weeks in advance. You can do it the night before an auction the following morning. As long as you file for bankruptcy under either 7 or 13, they are required to stop the foreclosure auction.
Okay.
Now, depending on the circumstances, you may or may not be able to keep the house. If you file a Chapter 7 and you can't get caught up on the mortgage fairly quickly, they're still going to end up going back to foreclosing at some point. But they'll
include it in the bankruptcy, though.
Oh, sure.
Versus it just being a foreclosure, although I'm not sure there's any real benefit to having that listed out separately. I mean, having it listed separately versus having it in the bankruptcy.
The benefit is this. It's if you go to a foreclosure and you owed more than the house was worth, then you're going to end up technically still owing money for a house you don't even have anymore. If you've got a $250,000 mortgage and the house sells at auction for $200,000, well, you still technically owe $250,000 to the lender. Now, what the bankruptcy will do, other than being able to pause the process at least, is going to get rid of the obligation to pay the loan. So now, you don't have the house anymore, but you also don't owe the $250,000 anymore, so at least you can make a fresh start.
Okay, so the assumption, I guess, as far as the doing a bankruptcy is that you were insolvent enough to do the bankruptcy. So including it in there will then relieve you of that future obligation.
Exactly. And oftentimes if people get to this point, it's fairly rare for me to see someone who's got, there's 6 or more months behind on their mortgage, but they don't have any other debt whatsoever. I mean, most of the time people are trying to use, credit cards or something in order to stay afloat. So if you get to this point, you might as well go ahead and make a fresh start entirely as opposed to still trying to bail water out of a sinking ship.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Especially if they're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, that just builds and builds and builds to a disaster. So anyway, well, I want to make sure you tell everybody how to get a hold of you, because one thing that you are gifted in is helping people honestly in bankruptcy, or at least giving them good advice to do what they need to do. Maybe that's not the option, but at least they've got a place, because most attorneys I have found, they take the money and ask questions later. And so, and you do it the polar opposite. So I want to make sure they know that they can call you and talk to you, and especially agents, real estate agents, they need that ally, because we run into a lot of people that need help and they're confused and frustrated and they feel like they don't know what to do because just like the ads and all these other things, it's very confusing. But I do thank you. I want you to go ahead and give them all of the best information to connect. Of course, they can always email me if you need Robert's information. But go ahead and give it to them.
Certainly. The best way to contact me is through my law firm's email. It's Rob, R-O-B, at robertspopelaw.com. I also do take phone calls on my cell phone. It's 571-215-6625. I will give you a couple of caution points about the phone, though. Oftentimes, since I do get a lot of calls, I'll let it go to voicemail first and then return a phone call later. Another thing is that, given the fact that I do a lot of work during the day, I do sometimes catch up on emails at night. But, of course, it's easy for me to send an email at 11 o'clock at night, but it's a lot more awkward for me to return a voicemail at 11 o'clock at night. So in terms of getting the best response time and getting the best information possible, I would recommend going with the email route. Now, as you were mentioning, Cindy, I'm not one of the lawyers that's going to respond to your questions and say, hey, that's an awesome question. Let me go ahead and send you my fee agreement, and you can send me a check, and I'll start billing against your deposit. No, if someone asks me questions, I don't mind answering questions without charging people. If at some point it gets to where I'm getting fairly involved in the process, if it looks like I'm going to be needing to negotiate on behalf of somebody or get involved and, send letters, emails, that kind of thing, at that point I'll work out something where usually what I try and do is charge a flat fee rather than charge hourly, because, that way people know what to expect. But more often than not, I'll explain to people what their rights are, what will likely happen if they go to court. And more often than not, I talk people out of going to court, and I talk people into settling things because it's in their best interests. I mean, I took the part of the bar oath seriously when I was trying to when they say that you should work for your client's behalf as opposed to your own. And if I wanted to, I could easily talk everybody into litigating, and that would do wonders for my bottom line, but it wouldn't do wonders for having happy clients in the end. So I try and help people, and more often than not, what ends up happening because of that is I get clients that end up either they get to the point where they do have to hire me and they're comfortable with me enough at that point where they they're happy to do that, or sometimes I get people that say, hey, this guy helped me, he never charged me anything, let me refer a friend to him. That friend will have something that they'll need to hire me for. And so, it all ends up working out. So that's kind of my philosophy of it. And, again, the best way is to email me at rob@robertpopelaw.com. And that way I can hopefully help whoever needs assistance. I focus mostly on real estate law and bankruptcy work. But in the event that you might have a question about another area of law, one thing the lawyers know a lot of is other lawyers. So I can probably find somebody that I would trust to refer you to in the event that you have a question about some area of law that I don't practice in personally.
Excellent. So, and if anybody didn't just write that down and you need to connect through me, that's fine too. You can use the school website at cindybishopworldwide.com and just click the connect to us. That's probably the best way. Most people know if you're on this call, you know how to get a hold of us. That's usually not an issue. All right, Rob. Well, thanks very much. And again, it's always a pleasure. You have a terrific day, and we'll see you for the next subject.
Well, thank you very much, Cindy. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you as well and to provide information to all of your loyal listeners. And I will talk to you soon and hope to hear from anyone that needs my assistance.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, push the safety bars up and exit the ride.